This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com coming to you on the 2nd of July 2011 here in Japan, the 1st of July back in the United States, where I'm joined on the line once again by our regular guest, Lieutenant Eric Schein of MartialLaw911.com and CrossingTheRubicon.org. He is also, of course, the host of In the Zone on the Republic Broadcasting Network on Saturday nights at 12 midnight Eastern, and that would be 9 p.m. Pacific. So, Lieutenant Eric Schein, thank you once again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, James. Sorry about the, I'm doing this via mobile on the run, on the road, and trying to keep things going. I'm in L.A. traffic. It's July 4th weekend, and I'm having fun.
I can only imagine how much fun that must be, but hopefully we can make it a little bit more fun with some lighthearted and wonderful conversation. So,
I heard your team. I heard your team won last night, so...
That's right, good. Yes. Well, for anyone out there who's interested, I am a Hanshin Tigers supporter, and they did just win handily last night, so I guess I'm happy. But how about yourself? Are you a sports fan?
Yeah, I usually root. My hometown is San Diego, California, so if the Chargers or the Padres, or it used to be the Clippers, and I think the Sonics were the indoor football or soccer team, and if any of those teams are doing well, I'm right there. But I wish I was a bigger, better sports fan, and I think if I had actually turned my intellect and avid reading desires, I guess, towards sports, I probably would have been doing well in Vegas somewhere or something. Rather than a federal officer, naval officer, officer in the U.S. Merchant Marine, Marine engineer, et cetera, to where I've got, and I'm being hunted by Homeland Security and the federal government for the last 10 years.
Yeah, that's it.
I feel like, who was it, Abby Hoffman? Who was the guy from the 60s that they went after? And actually saw an animated cartoon about the judge and how they went after him on, I think he was actually doing some stuff though, like civil unrest, like upturning some park benches and had taken over some state or local parks, and was kind of getting, I'd say he was definitely crossing the line. All I had done was file formal civil complaints in federal court and gone after some federal military contractors, not knowing quite what I was getting into at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So the First Amendment is dead here in the United States, and I think the world needs to be warned, and I've tried to put this out and I've been putting it out for many years now, is we've had a coup d'etat to where the military industrial complex, if not directly the military itself, have taken over the United States.
Well, that's right, but unfortunately, it's definitely not just the First Amendment that's been torn to shreds, and they're really going for the whole kit and caboodle now, and it's a question of whether people will resist that.
Yeah, and that's what I've been saying for some time, and this isn't just here in the United States, it's in the Middle East, it's in Europe, it's even in countries like England, to where the people are, I'd say, a little upset, and not even England, but other British subjects, like in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, members of the Commonwealth, which, are traditionally considered constitutional monarchies. So if you're in a monarchy, constitutional monarchy, you're safe from what's going on around the world either. And all you have to do is look at the Middle East and what's going on in a lot of these Middle Eastern countries that have royal families that are, seeing enormous levels of civil unrest.
We certainly are. We're moving into an age of unrest that I think has been manipulated. I think certainly the financial calamity that we're living through was not only foreseen, but was actually planned in advance. I don't think this was just a series of bumbling errors to lead us into this financial black hole that I can't imagine anyone didn't see coming when they were removing Glass-Steagall and doing all the shenanigans under Clinton in the 90s and where we are today.
And Clinton, a lot of people joke tongue-in-cheek that Clinton was the best Republican president we ever had. which is true to an extent. I don't think people realize that what the Republicans have done successfully is, to an extent, have been cheering candidates like Clinton and Barack Obama, who I would not say, and I was, you know, I wasn't, I would say I was more of a Democratic Republican, which goes back to our founders and our roots like Jefferson and others. I'm not necessarily a Democrat, and I'm not necessarily a Republican. I believe in limited central government. I don't believe in central government except for a few things like defense and more. I believe, you know, and this even goes into issues like with Alexander Hamilton, who is not only a Federalist, but I believe a world Federalist. Many of the people that back and follow, if not even adore, Hamilton as some kind of demigod, you know, they're all, whether you want to call it capitalism. And, you know, I've been thinking about that because people keep throwing out the term capitalism. I would, again, call it royalism, because capitalism is truly, he who has the gold makes the rules. I mean, that's really what capitalism is. And I hate to use the term social democratic society or a progressive, because all these words have taken on connotations that they, you know, don't or didn't even have. Like progressive, that term came from applying taxes more and more progressively to individuals who had done better by society and the system that we live in, that those who benefited more paid back more, you know, to where our progressive taxes here in the United States were at a point, I think, in the 1910s into the 20s, and then Roosevelt did a number on them in knocking them down. They were as high as 93%, to where you made over a certain amount, the majority of everything that you made was effectively going back to the government. And people would, you know, decry that and say that's not, you know, fair or just somehow. But most of the people who become like billionaires, whether it be Bill Gates or trying to think of some other people that I could throw out as examples, Bill Frist, my favorite, of course, former Senate Majority Leader for the Republicans, who, you know, his father and brother stole billions of dollars from Medicare and Medicaid and had to pay back $1.7 billion. Our system, you know, these people can go out and buy and sell and kill and buy off judges and corrupt the system because, you know, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. They've got so much power as a billionaire that they're, you know, any kind of equality under the law is simply erased.
Well, I think we're probably coming at this from different perspectives, because I certainly don't see that adding a 93% tax or whatever and giving that money to the government is going to make anything better, because then the government just becomes the exact same type of tyranny that the billionaires would be if they were just by themselves. I mean, I don't think that giving money over to the government is the answer to this.
Yeah, but if it's a centrist government to where it's, you know, like King George, to where the control base is far removed from the people, then yes, I would say so. But if it goes back to the local, this is like what happened with Hamilton, was he formed the Revenue Cutter Marine in the 1790s, which eventually became the U.S. Coast Guard. He tried to create it as a central, federal, extra-constitutional, you know, military or paramilitary police force under the Treasury Department. And his contemporaries took it back, broke it up, and turned over. You know, one good thing that came out of it was the revenue cutters were actually made by the best national standards. And I would look to, like, school system and more for the same thing, is to build the best schools we can to a national standard, but allow that to be done at the local level to meet the, you know, standards. The revenue, the cutters were turned back over to the, local custom houses and to local control and local authority. And the revenues that were brought from that in tariffs and impositions were brought back into the local custom house. They didn't, you know, we used to have a system to where it was difficult to get money and power to the central government, and most of that stayed with the people in the states, to where now the states and the people are begging the central government for money.
Right. And I don't think, again, I don't think that's just a chance, a happenstance of the way things have unfolded. I mean, again, I think that the organization and centralization of power in the hands of that central faraway government has been a coordinated effort on people, on the behalf of people who would seek to benefit from that for a long time. And I think the big billionaire families have been a central part of that.
Right. I mean, you can name them Rockefellers and Getty and Hughes and, you know, Gates, and, you know, because Gates is another name, and you start finding that it's not just Bill Gates and Melinda, but it's also Bob Gates, like, you know, Secretary of Defense, who just stepped down. But Gates makes rubber. They make belts for your car. They make hoses, radiator hoses for your car. They're an enormous manufacturing family. It's like being a member of the Ford family.
Well, I would like to stress once again for people out there who might think that somehow I'm endorsing these views, that I truly don't think that that taxation is the answer to any of our problems, and in fact, I'd like to go the other way. But it's kind of fascinating to me that you would propose that some kind of other economic system would actually be beneficial.
Well,
so you're against capitalism, so you're for a command and control economy?
No. I mean, yeah, but you have to understand what capitalism is. It's not... There's two, whether it's socialism, capitalism, communism, whatever ideology you want to look at, there's a split, and it's not democratic or Republican or progressive or liberal or conservative, and to a degree it is, but it's about rich and everyone else. That the elite, who are schooled in a different manner and fashion in different places, you know, Ivy League, Harvard, and more, they have a different point of view of all of these different concepts than your average Joe or Jane. I mean, there's a huge split. And I mean, why do you think it's so easy in the United States to get people to vote against their own self-interest?
Well, there are several factors that go into play in that. I mean, I think control of the media is one of them. Control of the education system is another. I mean, there's a lot of things that make people, I guess, dumb down to a certain extent so that they don't understand their own interests.
Yes, but true. But also the, I'm trying to navigate my way through traffic as we're, a working man, a laborer, is not a capitalist. And to say that they are, or to somehow believe that someday they will be like Bill Gates, is a pipe dream. I mean, that's the exception, not the rule. Most people are, I hate to say it and term it this way, and it's not like I'm coming up with the term, but wage slaves. It's not like it's not like most people can easily raise the capital, because the government's supposed to be there to do things that we can't do ourselves. And whether it's through, and I hate to even mention it or mention it in this light, is like in the corporate and governmental, you know, what's the term now that they use, to basically where the corporation is working with the government. Which, you know, is fascism in my mind, at least as it's being practiced right now. Not that you can't have companies that abide by the social contract that they have established, like union contracts, you know, or like, I don't, you know, from my own personal experience, like unions, you shouldn't have to be a member of a union to be able to enforce your civil or contractual or even constitutional rights. And it's kind of the point now where the unions have been afforded the corporate model but they've aligned themselves now with the corporations. My own union, quote unquote, Federal Officers Association, the Marine Engineers Beneficial Association, sat alongside the federal contractors, the big employers, federal employers, the shipping companies, in federal court and protected them rather than the union member, me.
Exactly. And to my mind, that raises the exact points of why I think that getting growing government at the expense of business is no better than having big business that will run over people's rights anyway. I mean, I think it's really two sides of the exact same coin. So I don't really understand the argument here.
Well, when fascism is, you know, when it is the same families, the same people, when you have different people who aren't beholden to each other, whether it's the same family, like, you know, Neil Bush, Jeb Bush, George Bush, George H.W. Bush, where you have all these family members who are watching each other's back, but then you've got other people from the same family, but they have the name of Davis or Walker, you know, like Scott Walker in Wisconsin or whatever. You have these extended family members who are, and plus people don't understand that they are, you know, there are relations here. Of one, you know, even Kerry, John Kerry and George W. Bush were members of the same brotherhood, Skull and Bones. To say that's not family, quote unquote, especially as seen by the elite and these families that are rubbing elbows together and intermarrying like the old royal families used to do, I think kind of ignores history and what's really going on, you know, behind all this. I don't believe in big government. I don't believe in big corporations. I don't believe in big unions. I believe that, like our founders, in the separation of powers, the dilution of powers to a large extent, which, you know, taxation goes to that, like the Paris Hilton tax or the estate tax. That this is something that Bill Frist was trying to do away with, to where anyone who made over a certain amount or was to inherit a certain amount from their family, you know, they may have had nothing to do with the growth of the estate or the wealth that had been acquired. They would forfeit 50% of their estate over to the government, which means the people. You know, it's supposed to be used for building roads, commerce, transportation, trades, things that we all benefit from, not to be transferred from one rich family who's inheriting money to a couple of other rich families who are using it to their own end. It was to prevent, like even what Roosevelt declared as economic royalists, was to, at some point when you concentrate, I brought up the example of, is it better to have 100 millionaire or 100 millionaires? You know, is it better to have, I believe that in a democratic republic or a system that's up by for the people, no matter what you want to, you know, declare it to be or call it, that the more power is broken up and not acquired, like look at what Berlusconi is doing in Italy. He controls the media. I mean, he's the, I think he's the president or whatever, or someone else is the prime minister, or he's the prime minister, someone else is the president. When you have that kind of wealth and power concentrated in one area or one family or one small group of people, it tends to be corrupting. And that's why a lot of these things have been set up so that, you know, like we have state borders here in the United States, just like what's in the EU now, to where we didn't have franchised companies. I mean, that was kind of a crash in the 1970s and in the 1980s and 90s. Of all of these hotels, hotel chains, rent-a-car companies, you know, a lot of it started with the airlines and the railroads and others, but they were heavily regulated to where if they had 50 employees or more, they had to abide by enormous labor law protections, due process right protections, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all of those are being completely eviscerated or wiped out.
I guess I certainly see the overall point that you're making, but it really begs to my mind what the end game would be for you. What type of society you'd like to see at the end, because personally I'd like to see a society where there is no centralized power of any sort, whether it be through corporations, which are really fictitious beings that have been created and granted law through the work of judges who were Skull and Bones members and others, by the way, but or you've got the idea of a society that's completely controlled by governments. But I think, to my mind, okay, both are the same thing.
But as an example, or for conversation's sake, say Katrina happens and your house gets wiped out, and say for whatever reason, say you had just moved in the house, brand new house, beautiful house, you, for whatever reason, there was a mix-up on insurance on your home and you weren't covered. So you should be out on the street, your home is gone, and you should be held liable to pay your mortgage, even though you've lost your home. And or should the government, the people, of by and for the people, it's just like the a better example would be the firemen of ancient Rome and the insurance that people had to take out, to where if you didn't have insurance, they would let your home burn next to a home that was insured, and at some point it's risking the home that's insured by these fire companies, quote unquote. And who stands to benefit? Certain things, fire, police, water, transportation, things that we all rely on and we should all share and be involved in, even our public library system or anything else, it should be the best in the world that the rich elite want to go to and that everyone else gets to share in as well. It shouldn't be a segregated or separate system.
Well, I think it would be disingenuous to claim that the idea that policing and fire and other such basic necessities are on the same level of a government that's taxing, you know, millionaires 93% or whatever. I mean, I think there's a discrepancy there.
I agree, and I think that the rich should, and that's where the term progressives came from, was that the better off that you're doing in society, like. A perfect example is like Social Security tax. Whether you believe it or not, the poorer people, the working stiffs, are the ones who pay more into that system. Guys like Warren Buffett, he's paying the same as his secretary into Social Security. And they're crying about the system and it's bankrupt and it's falling apart, which is, you know, a lot of it's propaganda because the system is healthy for the next 20 to 40 years before they see any real kind of, you know, problem or issue with it. But if, you know, if that system is to exist and be there for all, why should Warren Buffett not pay more into that system than his secretary? Well, he's the entire, you know, whether it's the defense system, our military, whether it's our roads or anything else, he's benefited from that system far more, whether it's his own intellect, whether it's the family that he's married into, whether he was lucky and in the right place at the right time, it is that system that we've created that allowed him to benefit to that extent. Without it, if he was living in, you know, well, some would argue that he'd probably be doing better in a banana republic because then he could be, you know, more of a dictator and really get what he wants by just paying for it and buying it. But that's where we're getting to here in the United States, to where, you know, money speaks more and has more power, wealth has more power than the people. I mean, how are we putting inanimate objects like a tool? You know, money is nothing more and nothing less than a hoe or a rake or a hammer. It's a tool that we're all supposed to be able to use to benefit transactions in society. It shouldn't be something that's manipulated to where the benefits of having a monetary system accrue to a certain class or type or group of people. The benefits of, like, if you think that there should be a central banking system, like here in the United States, like the Federal Reserve, then shouldn't that money from that public system, just like commerce, trade, transportation, you know, public utilities and more, should that not accrue to the people, rather than a small select group of people?
Well, to me, that goes to the heart of the issue, because you can talk about all these, you know, window dressings about taxation levels and things like that, but really the absolute heart of the system is the monetary system itself, and it is set up in such a way that every dollar that's created out of thin air is created as debt to banksters. So, I mean, obviously the entire system is set up to benefit the banksters. So to me, monetary reform is absolutely the heart of this, and if you had a money system that made sense, you would not have to think so hard, or so long, or so hard about how to regulate the system.
But taxes wouldn't be an issue, because you and I would not be paying taxes, and neither would the rich. It would actually be coming from industry, commerce, trade, transportation, as was intended by our founders. Like, to a large extent, 100% of our government here in the United States up to the 1930s was paid for by tariffs imposed upon foreign, and this goes even like Fukushima, agriculture, killer bees, and more. When we had a system of laws and boundaries and borders that were, and I hate to say the term because it's just such a misnomer, regulated, to where you could not, you know, take any kind of dangerous cargo, botanicals, animals, etc., that they had to be, to an extent, put into quarantine, so that you were not taking various life forms and basically destroying an ecosystem, like taking things into Hawaii that don't belong into Hawaii, or that don't belong in Hawaii, and that can actually decimate and destroy the Hawaiian ecosystem. So when you look at it from even an agricultural or natural perspective, it goes to the same thing like money. We're not all on the same money system, and you see what's going on in Europe and even here in the United States. We can't even get on the same metric system. You know, we're still running the English and American and, the metric system itself. And all different countries, we're not on one system of measurements for the world, and they're trying to push on a single monetary system by, like what you alluded to, all of these machinations that are constructed to centralize the power and the wealth and the control in as few hands as possible. And I believe in breaking that up and distributing that power base into the hands of the people as much and as best as possible. And some would say that's communism. It's not even close. I mean, our Constitution here in the United States, and I think some would argue that it's not in the Constitution, but, it says it starts off with we the people. It doesn't say we the corporations or we the holders of commerce, trade, and transportation. It's saying we the people. The most important thing, I think, in our Constitution and the system that we set up, a constitutional democratic republic, a limited form of government, was that the hands and the power was in the people. And it wasn't in a bunch of dead presidents. It wasn't in banknotes.
Well, it sounds to me like you would be a supporter of, or at least at home with, people like Ellen Brown and Bill Still. I'm not sure if you're familiar with their works about the monetary system that they wanted to set up, but I would suggest that you would check into them, because it seems like that's
how you're going. Bill Still is, and yeah, I've run into him at some of these seminars and other places and stuff, and he's got a couple books out and stuff, and I don't know offhand because it's been quite a few years since speaking to him. But I mean, do you believe that we should have a one currency for the world and that it should be electronic? Because to me, that's removing. Well, go ahead.
Of course not. Why would you even suggest that? Right. I would be in favor of
that. Well, I think we're on the same page.
Yeah, I think in many ways we are. It certainly.
Well, I think every nation, because this goes back to distribution of power, that every nation, if not, you know, I would say here in the United States, every state should have its own, and I don't want to say monetary system. We should have one system here in the United States where we are under one system of common law for all the United States. We should have a same or similar, currency system and monetary system, but I think it should be controlled by the states. The states should have their own mints. It's just like a Ford Motor Company should not be able to move 50,000 jobs out of the United States overnight. You know, Ford or other car companies, Ford should only have, you know, or be one car company in one state. There should be other car companies in other states in the United States. Every state should have not only its own power system, power grid, and compete with others and be able to sell it across state lines and to where that money comes back into the public coffers and is used for R&D. The biggest, I guess, difference between privatization, which is one, and also public trust, which is on the other side, is on one hand you do things for profit, and on the other you do things at cost, without profit. And certain things like fire, you know, if you do fire at a for-profit or on a for-profit basis, then you've got people going out there and setting fires. If you've got people that are fixing broken legs for profit and not doing it at cost, and when I mean cost, I mean good pay, good medical benefits, good pension and more for the employees of a system that's, you know, not for profit. But if you have it to where fixing broken legs is done for profit, you get to the point where people go out and start breaking legs so they can make more money. I mean, and you can laugh at that or say, nah, people are not that way. I'll give you an example. They had a guy, and this is down in San Diego. He fixes broken windshields. And there was a rash of broken windshields in a neighborhood. And lo and behold, every broken windshield had this guy's business card on it. Well, it turns out after the police did investigation and started to kind of dig into all this a little bit deeper, the guy who owned the glass company and repaired broken windshields, because business had gotten slower, wasn't fast enough, or wasn't growing as fast as he wanted, he was actually going out and breaking windshields and putting his card, his business card, on the windshield. So, you know, the government should be there to prevent the worst in human nature, and we're seeing it right now. Our country is carrying on war all over the world to an extent, I think, that exceeds what Germany did in the 1930s and into the 40s. We're in far more countries than Germany was.
That's very true. That's very true. But again, it comes back to me to say that, well, what really are you suggesting here? You're suggesting that governments will be some sort of, you know, utopian institutions run by wonderful individuals who won't seek to use that power for their own profit?
Well, no, at some point, like administrative agencies of the federal government, like what I'm dealing with the Coast Guard and Homeland Security, they shouldn't be there dealing with individuals, with citizens. They should be there dealing with corporations. And that's what they were intended for. They were there for industry, for business. And I'm talking big business, you know, like General Motors, Ford, and others, to make sure that they were not abusing their employees. That when you know, you get so many employees or such a level of wealth and power, you know, amassed in one company doing one thing, you know, and a lot of this comes from federal and military contracts. You know, think of what GE also makes other than light bulbs. They're one of the largest weapons manufacturers in the world. That gives them not only an inroads to government and people in government and placing people in government, but enormous federal contracts and even, I'm trying to think of a way of saying it, contracts that would keep them afloat in bad times and in good, that your normal average citizen could only dream about even getting close to.
You'll have to excuse me as a helicopter is going over my apartment right now.
I hate when that happens. They do that a lot online too. As you get bigger and as you amass more wealth and power, you're the one who needs more oversight, not little Joe who employs five people. It's, you know, the Department of Labor was not created to go after small and mom and pop businesses. It was, you know, created to be able to go up against mining companies, drilling companies, oil companies, and others who, as you know, like even what we saw with the linen industry and garment industry in manufacturing and more, fire and you know, fire prevention in these enormous facilities where they're using, you know, bringing people together almost as if they were a herd to benefit off of amassing them in a massive factory, paying them, you know, pennies on the dollar, especially like in, you know, large cities and more. All you have to do is look through history to see example after example after example of when wealth and power is amassed in one central place, whether it be an individual or a family or a group of families, or even the central government, which, you know, we both alluded to or spoken of. I've talked about distribution of power. You know, I believe that it should be harder that all the states and all the people of all the states should have to get together and declare war, and they should be, it should be so strong that you should not have to sell a war to people, that you're actually being invaded, and that you're, I mean, that's what the Geneva Conventions were about, was that our, that's why we changed it from a Department of War to a Department of Defense, was that we weren't supposed to be going into any other countries unless we ourselves were being invaded. And we're in, you know, forget about the Balkans under Clinton and Kosovo and more. We're in Syria and Yemen and Iraq and Afghanistan, and we're prodding Iran. And I mean, you know, we've got troops in Korea and Japan and Germany. And I mean, come on, it's insane. And people don't realize not only are we funding this, you know, military police state, but we're also funding this military police industrial prison state here in the United States, where we've got more people in prison per capita and percentage-wise, or, well, no, total numbers and, you know, per capita or percentage-wise, than any other country, including communist China. And it goes to the centralization of the prison industries. It goes to where they're not even serving the local city, community, or state to an extent. They become warehouses for people.
Indeed. So if the problem is centralization, then surely the answer is decentralization.
Right. I agree completely. You know, even whether it's a union, like my union is not only a national, it's an international. And what they had done was they had seven or eight different districts. District one was the Marine Engineers, and it was specifically Marine Engineers, where that district, who and what they represented was engineers. That's it. The mates had their own. They had brown water for like ferries and tugs. It was basically segregated by the work that you did, you know, to where it almost goes back to the Constitution, to where, you know, your peers are those who are there to protect you. And since then, they've broken it up. They've merged it all. It's all basically one union now. And they've got shoreside workers voting in dues increases for people that are going to sea that aren't there to vote and protect their own rights. So they're pitting a group against another group. And I'm talking about the you know, the elite, whether they be corporate or governmental. And I believe, just like what, you know, Mussolini said, that we're living in a time of corporatism or fascism, to where the people in government are related directly to or beholding to the people in corporations and industry. And they're in there rather than protecting the people at large, all the people, and realize that, look, if we step on the little guy, we're only as strong as our weakest link, and that's not good for the industry, whatever industry that might be, shipping, trucking, et cetera, steel industry, rubber, petrochemical, et cetera, that it's not good for these large manufacturers or the individual to step on anyone's rights, whether they're civil, contractual, constitutional, and more. I mean, look what's going on in my own situation and look how difficult it is for me to get people to understand the gravity of it, where you have a branch of military that is making civilian law. The military is imposing law upon the people of America. A branch of military has been created, like you mentioned about money being created out of thin air. They've created a branch of military out of thin air. They've taken the Coast Guard, a federal maritime police force, and turned it into a branch of military. And it's not even in the Department of Defense where it's supposed to be contained, where military law is to be contained. It's now outside of and in Homeland Security. And this goes to the same concepts of like even fractional banking, which is, you know, central to the issues of money and more. And this goes to the issue of derivatives and a lot of things that crash the market. They're taking these concepts of like fractional banking, quote unquote, and applying it to labor and to the monetary system in other ways, like derivatives, the bond system, insurance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because it's worked so well in the monetary system and enriched a very, you know, focal, central, very well-connected group of families that, hey, if it worked there, you know, why not? And now they're trying to use that private banking system or private banking cartel to privatize everything else, which goes back to, you know, what we talked about in the beginning, capitalism, which is, you know, in my mind, a different way of saying royalism. If you go to the book that I always quote from Philip Bobbitt's The Shield of Achilles, War, Peace, and the Course of History, he talks in there about separating the people from their government. He's advocating this. And to me, that goes back to royalism, feudalism, to where the people are not the ones who have anything to say. Look what's going on in all the problems in any country in the world right now. It's the rich elite, like even in Fukushima. Was it the people who decided that we should extend those plants, whether Japanese or around the world, and plants that were designed for 20 years, pushed to 40 years or beyond, instead of having those things, look, build them for 20 years, designed to take them down, take them apart, reclaim the materials, do whatever we have to do to take it apart safely, and build the next generation with all the same. I mean, you see, it's not good for the nuclear power generation industry, because now they're even talking about shutting down in Germany and France and other countries around the world and not using nuclear at all. So whether you believe in nuclear or not, and this may not be the best example because some people are just so, you know, hot over the nuclear issue and say that we shouldn't be doing it, shouldn't use it. And I would say solar is, you know, the best option right now, or one of them. But at some point, we should be able to and need to harness that type of technology for other purposes, not for weapons, I don't believe. Whether it's, you know, interstellar travel or whatever, that there are good things that come of that, research and development and more. But if we're going to use that kind of technology, very dangerous, very lethal technology, that we should do. And this is the same thing in the Merchant Marine. Most of the ships that were out there were designed to have a 20-year lifespan. And instead, this goes to like what happened with Exxon Valdez and double hull tankers. Instead of removing those ships from service in 20 years and coming out with the next generation, the best at the time with all lessons learned from everything that's gone on in the last 20 years, and bringing out the next generation of the best, fastest, most economical commercial vessels, you know, pliable, and do it as a public trust that we all benefit from, we see where the banksters get in there and try to, you know, eke another penny out of wherever they can. And it's to the detriment not of just all the people, but also the bankers themselves, because the aftermath of the Exxon Valdez or the Event Horizon, the BP event in the Gulf, and other incidents, we all pay for that. I mean, the people at the bottom pay for it a heck of a lot more than the people at the top, because the people at the top can leave the Gulf and go somewhere else, move, vacation somewhere else. They live in a bubble world to an extent that is far. And I think you've seen this to where a lot of the, and this is going on in Dubai and other countries, where the quote-unquote rich elite are literally making a system that is far removed that they live in and that we can't and don't have access to at all. Even now they're talking about this for travelers, a trusted traveler program. I don't know if you've seen that.
I have indeed, unfortunately, yeah.
Well, and this goes into, like, who's behind that. It's the same people like Lockheed Martin, a federal military contractor that owns a transportation worker identification card that was funded by transportation workers as a scare tactic to force a biometric ID card upon transportation workers. And now they want to, because you're going to have a background check to get into this trusted traveler program. So then we're setting up this whole system of the elites, who most of us don't even know who they are, what their names are. You can't even access their homes. And for you to even rub elbows with them would be, the chances are slim and none. They're setting up a system to where those who will do what they are told, like quote unquote good Germans, and will not ask questions, are then put into this system where they're part of this class of people that are serving the upper crust, the royals, the elites, whatever you want to call them. And whether they're actually from blood or lineage and can trace their roots back, or their new money somehow, there is, and it's getting more and more obscene, to where there's the haves and the have-nots, or as Bush, you know, would declare them to be, the haves and the have-mores. But to where those who are, whether the haves or the have-nots, they are living in a very precarious situation, to where things like public trust that are supposed to be there as a safety net, if you privatize all this stuff like insurance, like they want to do with medical insurance or hospitals, you know, to cure the insurance problem, the healthcare problem, I would say the best way to do that is to build public hospitals. But then people would try to align me with Fidel Castro on Cuba or something. But, you know, building that as a public system to where anyone, I don't care if you're an illegal immigrant, a legal resident alien, an aborigine, you know, whatever, a vacationer coming here to the United States, somebody who was born and raised here, somebody who immigrated here and got their citizenship, there should be public hospitals that you can go into and get medical attention. It doesn't matter who you are, how much money you have or not, you should be able to go in as part of the public system that's all paid for by your tax dollars, that you can go into and that even rich people would want to go into because their privacy is protected. Their medical records are protected. It does not matter who you are or what you're worth or anything else. Those records are yours and not the hospitals, not the corporations, and not the governments. And anyone else who tries to use them, like in my own situation, the federal government, Coast Guard, Homeland Security, stole my medical records, falsified my medical records, and they're using those to impoverish me rather than to provide any kind of assistance or help or get me back on my feet.
You know, I think this is a good example of utopian thinking because, of course, anyone who is thinking clearly would want that type of system to, if it could work, if you could go and have these wonderful public hospitals that would provide this treatment. But in reality, what you would get is the people who already own and control the governments and control the system, manipulating that system in order to bring about what they want. And in that case, for example, with the public hospitals, you could have that being the big stick by which the government could then implement whatever types of new vaccines or new technologies they want.
It should be locally controlled, locally owned. It should be a public trust. Because, you know, and a good example of this coming from England is the House Trust for the London Bridge. You know, that was set up 800 years ago or more by a king, no less, in a kingdom, in a United Kingdom eventually, to where that public trust was so well managed that not only did it repair, which was the original mission of the trust, and this was through tax dollars, through private donations and more, but it was managed as a public trust. And it doesn't matter whether it's managed privately, and I would disagree. I think it has to be public servants. And, you know, the definition of that, I guess, could be played with to an extent. I don't believe in these NGOs, non-government organizations, because all they are is the privatization of government. You know, the government is supposed to be controlled by the people, and the corporations control the government, then it's, you know, fascism. You don't see anybody sticking up and standing up to these corporations. They're either being threatened or bought off. But the London Bridge House Trust, it was originally to maintain the London Bridge. And it grew to such an extent because it was so well managed by some honest, decent people who were subjects in a kingdom. I don't care to an extent about that. If you're honest and decent and doing your job and you're representing all the people all the time and not just a certain group or, you know, certain class, everybody benefits all that much more, all the different classes or types or, you know, whether they be citizens or subjects in a republic or in a kingdom. But this public trust grew to the extent to where it could not only maintain the bridge as its initial intent, but to where it could rebuild it, which it did do. And the old London Bridge was sold and it's in Arizona now or whatever. But this trust has also grown to the extent where it can not only maintain the London Bridge, but replace it, but then it can replace any and all bridges in and around London. And it's even grown beyond that, the extent that it's giving out grants, not loans, grants for environmental concerns in and around London. That's how a public trust is supposed to work. It's supposed to grow into perpetuity to carry out the mission that it was set to do. And if some good-minded people can see beyond the original mission and the trust has grown to that extent, then so be it. But I don't, to that point, I don't believe in like what Melinda and Bill Gates are up to with Warren Buffett and what they're doing in the medical profession and the medical industry. That's, you know, they're not just building hospitals. They're setting law and policy for people because of the amount of access and wealth that they have. And that, to me, is not in the same vein or same mindset as what I laid out with the London Bridge House Trust. That, to me, that's far different. That's more about control. That's not about opening access, because it's like the movie Field of Dreams or whatever with Kevin Costner, and you'll build it, they'll come. The building the London Bridge paid back more in revenues in commerce, trade, transportation, fees, etc. They allowed everyone, rich and poor, to cross the bridge without a fee, because they knew that opening up this bridge to commerce, trade, and transportation would pay for itself 1,000, if not 1,000,000 fold, beyond it has, especially over 800 years in time, to where simply building that as part of the public trust, the public commons, the things that we all share, has opened up so many more doors than it has closed.
Well, again, let me say I think you would be well served by refamiliarizing yourself with Bill Still and people like that who are advocating the printing of money by the government to be used, to be spent into the economy on public infrastructure projects, and to have that as the basis for the creation of money instead of the bankers creating it as debt.
But that's even what the Social Security Trust Fund was supposed to be used for, to invest into public programs, not war. Not supposed to be robbed for the war chest or whatever, to where the Social Security Trust Fund would grow to where you wouldn't have to pay into it. No one would have to pay into it if the money in that trust was used to build roads, build bridges, build maglev train systems, to where it opened up commerce, trade, transportation, and to where the revenue generated by that would go back into the Social Security Trust Fund, to where the fund itself was self-propagating. It was self-funding, to where at some point, this goes to our whole system here in the United States, where it's been misconstrued as or turned into a fascist state, to where the government sponsors something like Silicon Valley. Our tax dollars go to that. R&D from, yes, the military, yes, the military industrial complex, and more goes into that. But the money that's generated from that industry is supposed to be self It's supposed to grow into perpetuity. It's supposed to be self-generating. It's also supposed to be self-correcting, so that money that comes out of that industry is supposed to pay for due process and constitutional protections and human rights protections, so that if you have a grievance, whether you're a consumer, whether you're a citizen, whether you're a subject, whether you're an industry head, whether you're a labor boss, does not matter where you sit or reside, that your rights are protected and that your rights and remedies are paid for by that industry as a cost of doing business.
All right. Well, we are moving into the final few minutes of our conversation. So what, wrapping this conversation up, what would you like the listeners to take home with themselves today?
Well, I guess to really start to consider the difference between what a public trust is that is carried out at cost with no profit, or profit goes back to all the people to grow that system, whether it's the postal service or some other type of service, where all those that are working in that industry, in that system, and not that you can't have competitors like Federal Express and UPS and others, but to where you have a baseline system like NASA, that public dollars go into it, tax dollars. The people that work in the industry, whether they be public servants or private, they are well paid, well provisioned for, well protected, due process and more, and that to where at some point the R&D that spins off of that not only goes to push NASA into the next generation, but also spin off at private corporations that are in the space industry, but also to where that technology is then used for, say, the Postal Service and or other industries, to where the payback dollar for dollar on a public trust is minimally a thousandfold, and that everything, whether it be fire, fighting fire, or police, or other certain public services that we all rely on, should be done at a at-cost basis, to where all the overhead is included in there, but there's no profit going into any particular family or corporation or stockholders' pockets other than the citizens or the people of the state. And this goes to what we talked about on the monetary system, to where the benefits that would accrue from the monetary system, fiscal system, the currency, instead of going into a private banking cartel, the benefits from that would accrue to the people and would be used so that we don't have to pay taxes, so that we don't have to give evidence against ourselves, and, you know, whether it be the IRS and more, and that any money that's generated or needed for tax purposes to build roads, to have the infrastructure, to water systems and more, is all taken off the top, off of industry, off of commerce, off of trade and transportation, and not the citizens, not the people, and even in a kingdom, not the subjects, but that it's taken off the top. And that money, because then you can't complain about, you know, and it also brings in the people, whether you're, you know, low on the totem pole or high, everyone is involved in the public debate. Everyone is involved and has a stake and is a stakeholder in those public commons.
And on that note, we are fresh out of time. So so tell people again how they can find your various websites or your radio program and how they can support you.
Well, www.crossingtherubicon.org, which goes into, you know, about the military getting into civilian affairs. And that's my, you know, core issue, that the military should not be carrying on civilian affairs. And then also www.martiallaw.com. As you said before, the program is 9 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time out here in California on Saturdays. You've been on it. You were helping co-host it for a while. I'd love to have you back on again as soon as possible, whenever you can find the time. And I thank you for having me on today, and peace.